Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today is Tell Del Tuesday, and we have a little treat for you today. I've brought in someone that I've known for a long time and a company that we've used for a long time because it's a very, very important and powerful tool, and that is Paul Faulkner with AdValerium.net, or AdValeriumTax.net. And I get that wrong every time because I forget to leave the tax in there. But the bottom line is that Paul's been helping our customers at Lifestyles Unlimited, our members, for years to fight their property taxes. So welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you for having me on, Del.
Sorry about butchering your name there, but I do that every time when I see it. So AdValeriumTax.net is the company name, or is it just AdValerium Tax?
It's AdValorumTax.net, started in 2000, and ad valorem is Latin for tax based on value, and that's what terminology was used in the mid, 1950s, and then it became ad valorem tax or property tax, all the same thing.
Oh, I've been corrected. That's cool. Ad valorem. That's the way to put it. Glad I learned how to pronounce it finally after 35 years. So let's talk real briefly here. I heard you have your daughter with you, Jenna. Is she here with us today?
Yes.
Yeah. So are we grooming her, take over or something?
That's correct. Jenna and her brother, Joseph, have been working together for maybe 4 or 5 years now to work on taking over the company.
All right. Well, it's really interesting. I didn't even know this about you. I was reading your resume here, that you had actually run a very large commercial real estate company for many years. You want to share your background with us?
Certainly. So I, out of school, became a CPA shortly thereafter, became a real estate broker, started working for Alum Properties in 1983, which was a real estate land syndicator. And then I made it over to a company known as Huntington Group and worked with them as CFO. They were multifamily construction, development, property management, also did shopping centers, many warehouses. And then I worked for Harold Farb's construction company, building apartments. That's Davis Brothers Construction. And then from there, I became the CFO for Flagship Properties, which I was there from 1995 to 2000 and started off with 2,000 apartments. And when I left, they had 10,000. And basically Flagship Properties, David Mintzberg, gave me the entire portfolio, and my former employer became my first client.
Wow, that's an amazing story. It really is. I didn't realize you worked for David for all those years. So, you know, that's the thing about being a CPA. My dad was a CPA, and I studied to be a CPA. And, you know, the CPA guy is the guy in the back room that does all the work that no one gets to know. So I guess now that you own your own company, you get to be the man out in front.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's open up the discussion here, if we could, with what I think the average homeowner has no idea of and the average real estate investor has no idea of, is that they think for some reason, well, for pretty common reasons, they believe that tax assessment actually means tax appraisal when the two are disconnected from each other. Could you share with us the difference between tax appraisal and tax assessment and the two differences in how they derived?
Sure. In Texas, as you know, we have no state income tax, so we rely heavily on property taxes, and it's done on an annual basis. Appraisal districts, there's 254 of them in Texas, are all charged with putting properties at 100% of market value on each and January 1st of each and every year. So in the greater Houston area, we have a lot of sales transactions, and so they're appraisal districts basically look in the rearview mirror, what sold in 2024, will become the basis for your January 1st, 2025 valuation. Texas is blessed in that we have some homestead exemptions that afford homeowners, if you live in the property and it's your primary residence, then you're entitled to a homeowner's exemption that caps your value, your taxable value cannot go up more than 10% per year. And then also affords you some exemptions off of that value. So in doing, you know, hearings every year, your market value is what the property would sell for or what they think it would sell for. And then your appraised or capped limited value cannot go up more than 10%. So the goal is always to get the market value knocked lower than the appraised value. And that's the only way that you truly save money.
So this is very complex. And digging in from this, we could come in from three different angles. So I hope that you're okay with the approach that I take. When we look at this situation, I've found that over the 35 years I've been doing real estate, in general and mostly in the past, we'll talk about right now in a minute, but in the past, I found that the tax assessed value compared to the appraised value by the bank were so far different, it was unbelievable. For example, I'd go buy a property for $2 million. It'd be tax assessed at $1 million. I'd go get a loan on the $2 million and the bank would lend me $1.5 million. But the tax assessed value was still only $1 million. So they're so disconnected that even with an appraisal, they didn't connect. Now, I know that recently a lot of that has changed, so we'll get to that in a second. Conversely, you go buy a property and some guy had owned it for 30 years and tax assessment was $1 million. You'd buy it for $5 million. And then somewhere along the line, you'd be expecting for that to be a catch-up because now it actually sold for $5 million, but it would stay on the books at $1 million, and then they'd try to take it up to $2 million, then we'd come to you, and you'd knock it back down to $1.5 million, and then the next year, they'd try to take it up to $3 million, and you'd fight them back down to $2 million. This inevitable battle would go on forever. Has that changed, or is that still there?
That's a good question. It has changed. When I first started, it used to be maybe 85 cents on the dollar. That's what we would budget. In other words, if you're paying $1 million for a property, you may want to budget that they're going to take it up to $850,000. It's changed a lot. There's been a lot more pressure from the state on the local school districts. They do a ratio study every year, and if a property sells for $1 million, they want it appraised very close to $1 million. They get in trouble if it's less than 95 cents on the dollar. So it has changed a lot, and I'll tell you in a minute, you know, what tools that they're looking at to change things and get it closer today.
Yeah, as a buyer, as investors, we've had to change our approach, like you said, the 85 cent thing. To now, we're pretty much going dollar for dollar. You know, that's our assumption. If I buy it for $5 million, I'm going to get taxed on $5 million. Eventually, you know, we try to fight it, so on and so forth. So this has gone on for years. And at one time, 10, 15, 20 years ago, when I didn't know any of you guys, I used to always scream and yell, you know, it's a con job. I think Betancourt started it all. They just made this deal where they know they throw the taxes up higher than they should be so that Betancourt and his crew could come back and fight them back down. And, you know, you understand what I'm talking about. Because right. Every year it goes up and we fight them down. They go up, we fight them down. I mean, I've been doing it for 35 years, and my assumption for all members out there and all people out there is that there's no way to win this battle other than to get yourself a company you like Paul's, and just every single year fight the taxes. Am I seeing that right, Paul?
You are seeing it right. Your highest operating cost for owning real estate, property taxes and insurance. Those are controllable costs to some extent. If you don't protest, you stand no chance and you're stuck with whatever value that of you. And it has in the past, there was not as much pressure. The appraisal districts could come up with some loose values and we could go in there and cut them and get very good reductions each and every year. Technology's changed things.
So as we go on here, let's talk about the first step. You're going to get this this announcement from the county that here's what your property tax value is. Let's walk through, if you would, Paul, the process of where and when to take which step, if you don't mind.
So the appraisal notices, it's called a notice of appraised value, generally comes out in the springtime, March until May. The protest deadline is May the 15th or 30 days from the date on that appraisal notice, whichever comes latter. You need to file a protest by May the 15th. Either have an agent on board, or you can do the hearing yourself. Try and settle the account informally. Is one bite at the apple. If you can't get to an acceptable value that you think is fair, then you can appeal it to the appraisal review board, which is a panel of citizens in the county, and they will listen to both the appraisal district and your arguments. Then they'll make a decision. And then if you're not happy with their decision, then you have the right to file for binding arbitration or litigation within 60 days of receiving that ARB determination of value notice.
You've just said a lot right there. And I'm thinking in my mind, as I've helped, you know, thousands of people get into this business of real estate, how much of it's necessary for them to understand. But I think it's probably a lot. Let's start with the first step. You're going to go in there and you're going to have this first meeting with them. I don't know how many people in my 35 years, 50,000 clients have said, I'm going to go do this myself. What are the pros and cons of doing it yourself?
Pro, obviously, you know your property better than anybody else. The con is it's a very specialized business. It's best to use the appraisal district's records and their sales evidence. A lot of times, brokers, agents may take a look at MLS sales, and the appraisal district doesn't know about those sales, or they were foreclosures, and so they're not vetted sales. And so you're kind of fighting an uphill battle. If you use the evidence that the appraisal district provides, cherry pick it, and pull out the lowest sales, average out three of the lowest sales in the neighborhood, that's your opinion of value. That's really the key to success.
So you go in there, and in that first meeting, it seems to me that they're pretty open to an easy adjustment. Am I right on that, or am I grossly wrong because it's changed recently?
They're fairly open to it as long as you're on track and using good evidence. Maybe you had a roof problem, had to have a roof repaired or a foundation problem, or perhaps you just purchased the property and you have a closing statement with commissions on it. All great evidence. They're pretty receptive to change the value.
All right. Now, I don't mean to be derogatory in any way. I hope this doesn't sound derogatory, but I have a lot of properties and many of the people in Lifestyles have a lot of properties. So I don't have the time to go down there and mess around with this. To me, to pay you guys to go down there and to do this is well worth the time and the trouble to get it done. But I've been given the image before that the people that do this professionally, like your company does, and I'm not particularly saying this of your company, but I've heard of other ones. I heard that because there's such a relationship with the taxing authority, they'll just walk down there with a pile of 50 files and lay them on the desk and go, let's go through these. And they'll just flat give them 10 or 20% off every single one of them just to do it, just to get it done, get it out of the room type of stuff. Now, I'm not opposed to that. I understand, you know, what's going on, and I always get that. But I've always noticed that I didn't think I really got my best price at that first meeting. What do you think of this thought process here?
It's a roll of the dice. Again, you're dealing with a person, and the person at the informal hearing could be, you know, pro-appraisal district, or they could, you know, be, you know, fair themselves and willing to really listen to what you provide to them. It's best to work up an account, each account separately, take a look at the facts and settle that one. To settle accounts en masse, and they're not going to do it at any 10 or 20%. If they were to settle anything en masse, it might be a measly 3%, which to me is I couldn't live with myself going in and just blanket signing off 3%. On all the accounts. It's just no, that's not the way to do business. I surely wouldn't want my property done that way.
So in my experience, as we go through this process, we always, you know, you come back and say, okay, we've got this reduction. Say, okay, great. Should we stop there? Or should we go in for the second, you know, panel? And for 35 years, almost every time I've said yes, except when they literally gave me upfront an agreeable value that's so below what I think it's worth, I say, you know what, I don't want to poke the bear. And I said, now let's stop, right? You know, let's stop. And but other than that, it's almost always, especially recently, you know, Ben, that we think we can get a bigger bite of the apple. So take us through how that next part works.
Sure. If you don't get an acceptable value at the informal process, take it before the appraisal review board, have good evidence. It's a very short hearing, so you give them bullet points. Don't bring in a lot of reports. Don't bring in termites and a baggie. They don't want any of that. If you just stick to the bullet points and make it short and sweet and point them in the right direction, they'll usually do the right thing.
So we're working on that, and we've worked that down to where we think we should have it. Now you come back to me and go, we think there's more. We think we can get more. And in a minute, by the way, we'll go through the way you come up with these different appraisals. So you can see that, hey, they're looking at it this way. We think we should look at it that way. And there's a difference. And we think we can get more. At this point, I end up suing them. You know, we go, hey, go ahead. Let's sue them. And in every single year that I've sued, ever since I've done this, I've come out to where I've saved enough from suing to pay the attorney and still end up better off, which is weird to me how that happens. But it just seemed to happen that way. How do you approach that next step? How do your customers have to pay you for taking it to the next step? And by the way, you can actually bring in there, how did they pay you for each of the first two steps also?
Sure. We work on a contingent basis generally. If it's a portfolio, 25% contingent fee. So when you go to litigation, and generally when we advocate for litigation, we pretty much always win. All the years that I've been doing this, I don't think we've ever lost. And when you take a look at how much it costs to file a tax lawsuit, is maybe $6,000. Divide that by the tax rate, you only need about a $250,000 reduction to break even. And when you're dealing with a $20 million asset, you know, $6,000 is kind of chump change. It's very cost effective to move forward.
I totally understand. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Paul Faulkner and the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
The roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments.
New to real estate investing? At Lifestyles Unlimited, you'll learn how to get started with step-by-step education and real-world strategy. Text radio to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007. Presented by Lifestyles Unlimited.
You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. With me here today is Paul Faulkner from AdValoriumTax.net. And he's helping us understand how we are going out there and protesting our property taxes in Texas. So let's go right to the next question. Is what are the three approaches to value? How are they coming to these values in three different ways?
Sure. Great question. Appraisal districts use the three approaches depending on the property type. For single family homes, it's market. What are properties selling for? And then once you get into multifamily or commercial properties, they're either going to value those on the income approach or it could be the cost approach. Cost approach is most applicable for when properties are just freshly built. And then on commercial properties, they also take a look at sales. That's where our firm or a competitor really shines because we have access to all the commercial sales. The income approach can be very complicated, and many owners really don't understand how the appraisal district is going to look at the income approach.
Well, the income approach is what I teach, so that's what my customers live with every single day, and that's how we value properties. But even within that, if we all knew the income approach, the way people do it can be different from one end to the other, between the banks, the sellers, the commercial real estate brokers, and the taxing authority. So as we go into this and we look at a multifamily property, because that's what we really do for a living here, it's multifamily, as we go into that, we look at this property and we say to ourselves, what are they going to value me on this year? Are they guessing at my NOI in the initial, you know, their initial comment? Are they just saying, okay, it was this last year, we're going to add 10% to everybody or 15% to everybody and just let you guys come fight it out? Or because they really don't have our NOI, do they, in the very beginning?
They don't. They guesstimate your NOI, which drives your value, but they start off with market rent, and they obtain the market rent. Many of your listeners may not know this from apartment data services. They do a survey, and so they take a look at the market rent, then they apply a stabilization rate, add in secondary income, and then add in expenses, subtract expenses from the income, and that's your NOI, and then divide that by a cap rate to determine the value.
Do they actually do all that, Paul?
We're in, you know, Houston, Harris Central Appraisal District. They have an income model. And when you protest your account, you can see exactly to the dollar how the appraisal district came up with your value on the income approach. It's on a simple one-page form.
All right. Which leads me to the next question. Property taxes have gone up. Property insurance has gone up. Payroll has gone up, operating expenses have gone up, and incomes have been stagnant for the last 18, 24 months. Why are our taxes still going up?
Well, if you're aggressive and fight, they should be going down. Truth matter, we've had very few sales in the past 24 months. There's just been a big disconnect between buyers and sellers on prices, and so people have been holding on to the properties, and interest rates are the biggest problem there. So the expenses have come up, and this year we got many of our values lower than what they were last year by being aggressive.
Yeah, I would have guessed that. If it actually works the way you say it does, I would have guessed that a majority of them, from the people I know, have less total income this year than they did the year before, or 2 years before, or 3 years before. It's been going down the last couple of years. Let's talk about another thing. Sometimes even when you have a good year, they've been able to fight my taxes down. And they've used something, which I can't remember the term, and I'm sure you do, but it's something akin to comparative market analysis, or something akin to, you can't charge me more than what my neighbors are getting charged type of thing. What is the name for that?
Sure, it's uniform and equal, or we there call it equity. In Texas, it's a two-prong approach. You deserve the lower of the two, either market, what the property would sell for, or equity, taking a look at a reasonable number of appropriately adjusted comparables. You're entitled to the lower of those two values.
Okay, so how does that work when the NOI is going down around you? Are they looking at all the already at the other properties that the NOI has gone down on? Or are they only looking at yours? Or how does that work? How do you balance that out?
Sure. So on the uniform and equal approach, the first column would be the subject property where they're guesstimating your NOI and your value. And then they may have five other properties on that page. They're merely guesstimating what those other NOIs are and what those values are, because those are based upon the notice values that were released in the spring before anybody did any of the hearings. And so if you might get lucky to where they guessed your market value high and they guessed that the other market values being low, you're entitled to the lower median average of those.
And at which step along the way will you get that? Will they give that up?
They will give that to you at the informal hearing or at the formal hearing.
All right. So we go through that, and we get down to the lawsuit part of it. What does bringing a suit do? How is that different? You've already gone before the board, made your logical argument. Who are you suing to? Who are you winning the argument to at the lawsuit stage of this process?
Sure. So you're actually filing a lawsuit against the local appraisal district, and then it goes into the, what they call it, review appraisal. It goes into the litigation department, and those tend to be more experienced appraisers. They get a lot of volume. There's an incentive to settle those cases. They don't want to spend a lot of money on legal fees fighting on those. And so generally, it's very cost effective to file litigation. Or if the property is valued less than $5 million, you can file binding arbitration, and that's very cost effective.
That's interesting. I didn't know that one. All right. So now we've walked through the process, and we've got it down as low as we can. They give us their new assessment. How does that work, and when do we have to pay the difference and or not pay the difference?
So if you can settle the lawsuit before January the 31st, you can take your tax statements and take a pen to them and mark them up and calculate what the new liability would be based upon the new agreed upon value, even though the judge hasn't signed off on it. You make that payment and you attach a conditional tax tender letter that just says, hey, the value is recently lowered to X. Accordingly, here's our payment for Y. And then when they finally correct it, you ought to have zero. It ought to wash out.
All right. So they're just accounting-wise at the county, they're going to say, okay, well, they paid only 80% of the bill because they sent us this notice that they won, but we're going to leave that balance on there until the county comes back and says, yes, we agree they won, and they clear it then. Is that what happens?
That's exactly right. It shows up on what we call a supplemental tax roll.
So if you don't win, or is there ever been a time where you've done that and it comes back to bite you in the butt? Because I've never changed mine and not paid it. I've always paid it and then gone back after that. For some odd reason, I don't know why, maybe just I'm ignorant. It could be. Has that ever bit somebody in the butt? It seemed to me so complicated to send them a letter and that some clerk is going to agree that whatever my letter said and my calculation is that that's going to come out right. I might be totally wrong, folks. We're listening to Paul on this one. Which way should people play it?
To our firm. Yeah, that hasn't happened to our firm. It's pretty simple math, really. When you pay, you may pay on the ARB value, then you would get a refund at the end. I've had some clients that have underpaid and they just guessed really low, and then they'll have to pay penalty and interest on the underpayment.
So that's happening when they guess. It's not when they're sending the letter. And the letter thing is always working.
Correct. And remember, many of these properties have loans on them, and lenders will want to pay. If the lawsuit's not settled by the time the taxes are due, the lenders will make the payment for the full amount. They won't even give you a chance.
You know, that's interesting. You just answered my question why I've always been on the other side of that. It's always been the lender. Mm-hmm. They just pay whatever the tax bill is, and then we go get it back. What has changed in the property tax business over the last couple of years? Because to me, it seems like it's changed radically over the last 5 years.
It has changed. It's changed a lot since COVID took effect. Remember when COVID hit, they lowered interest rates very low. We had tremendous sales activity across the United States, more in particular in the Sun Belt states. Values went up 20% year over year for a few years. Texans got very upset with, you know, paying a lot more in property taxes if they didn't buy a property. Their existing property went up for property taxes. And then they put in a circuit breaker, which is a pilot program for 2024, 25, and 26. And what that did was all non-homesteaded properties that were valued less than $5 million got 20% was the year-over-year increase limit. And so that saved a lot of people that had land or apartments that were valued less than $5 million. Instead of going from $2 million to $4 million, they were capped at going from $2 million to $2.4 million. Really helped people out. Plus, we've had the compression and the tax rates have come down.
Is that still in effect?
That's still in effect. In fact, it's going to sunset next year in 2026. unless the state legislature gets together and changes it, I'm in tune with appraisal districts and different associations and chief appraisers. I don't think it's going to, I think it's going to sunset and go away.
Do they have any backing that up in Austin? Anybody, any of the people that we know?
They do. Senator Betancourt's actually pretty involved in that. We're all pushing to keep the caps in place. It comes down to funding. I don't know if they're going to be doing that. And to be honest, hopefully we're not going to have the 20% year-over-year increases that we had before because of where interest rates are at today.
Okay. Let's talk about from one state to the next and how it works here in Texas. For years, we were able to hide what our values were. No one ever really tracked them down. And then a year or two or three, and I don't remember exactly when it was, I think about 2 years ago or whatever, they said that Fannie Mae started opening up its books to the taxing authorities. They were allowing the taxing authority to get to the mortgage amounts and to get to the sales records and so forth. And whereas in some states that I own real estate in 12 different states, in some states it's a full disclosure state. You sell it, you got to fill out a report and send it to the authority, you know, taxing authority, boom, right there. Mm-hmm. But forever we didn't have to, and so they had to try to figure this all out on their own. But now I'm hearing they can go right to data sources. Is that true? Can they get to Fannie Mae's records now?
It is true. They can get to securitized loans. Securitized loans have to report, I believe, quarterly, their operating statements and their quarterly rent rolls. There's a service out there called TREP, T-R-E-P-P. Uh-huh. TREP accumulates that data for these lenders and sells that data to the appraisal districts. So Texas is one of the few non-disclosure states. It's always been a cat and mouse game, but now with TREP, appraisal districts are a lot more privy to these income and sale prices.
So I have two more questions I want to get to you. I'm trying to think which is a better order to end on here. Let's go this way. When and where should I start the process of thinking about my taxes? When should I be on top of this? How much information do I need to get to you? When should I get it to you? What's the timing here?
Sure. So we in January, once we start the new year, we wait and we ask for the previous year financials. Usually financials are generated on around the 15th of the following month. So come around January the 15th, we're reaching out to all of our income producing clients, asking for an income statement and a rent roll. And then we start building up our income. We take that data, enter it into our system, and then we wait for the springtime when the appraisal districts have come out with cap rates. In the meantime, we're out trying to come up with our own cap rate studies that would support a lower valuation. The earlier, the better that you engage somebody, the more proactive that you are, the better results you're going to get.
Second half of the question, what kind of stuff can I bring to the table to try to get them to lower my tax? I had a storm, I had a fire, I had, you know, what types of things can I use to try to fight my taxes down other than just my NOI?
Sure. They have to be material. Remember, in Harris County, now our tax rate is about 2%. So if you got a $20 million property and you need maybe one roof at a couple hundred thousand dollars, that's not really not going to get you very far. If all the roofs need to be replaced or the driveway's got to be replaced, those are capital items. As an agent, what I'll try and do is take 1/8 of that amount and amortize it, add that to your existing expenses, and try and use the higher expenses to lower the value.
Yeah, the part that's hard to understand, even though I took 8 years of accounting, is still this back and forth game, is that, okay, now I've lost the roof, but now I put a new roof on. So the property's actually worth more with a new roof, yet you're getting it down how?
Well, remember, appraisal districts are valuing the property on the income approach. And when you use the income approach, you're really not taking a look at the roofs. And so if you come in and renovate a property and put in new appliances, put in new flooring, put in crown molding, you're enhancing the property, you're going to get higher rents. And when you get the higher rents, it'll flush out into a higher value. But just because you did the work doesn't mean necessarily the value is going to pop right then.
All right. Hey, we got to go. So give them your contact information, please, Paul.
Sure. We're at advalorumtax.net, www.advalorumtax.net, or 281-957-9600.
All right. Appreciate you coming on the show and all the years that we've been working together. For the rest of you out there, remember this. It's not the money. It's the property taxes. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.